Howdy, friends, and welcome into the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the TCU Horned Frogs on SI Network. I'm your host, Just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native with interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andres, who seems to co-host every podcast for our site. And this is episode 8 of our show now, and it's coming to you minutes after episode 7. Well, I don't know when y'all will be watching this, but we're recording this minutes after episode 7. We cover TCU football and a smattering of other topics related. It is Tuesday, the 27th of August at the time of this recording, and we are joined by special guest Nate Cross. Nate, thank you for joining us for this week one edition where we are going to preview the first TCU game of the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm super excited.
We've got a lot to talk about, including the TCU-Stanford game. We're going to give some kind of Saturday selection-style picks for the biggest Big 12 games this week, plus a couple non-Big 12 games. We're going to talk a little bit of smack about SMU and how they looked against Nevada this past week, and we are going to preview the game with Stanford. But first, I need to ask you guys, just how excited, on a scale of 1 to 10, are you for Friday night?
Nate, go ahead and answer this because I'm going to go into a spiel.
I'm going to say a 7. There's still a slight worry after what happened last season at the beginning. But the levels are high. I think this is a much better squad and deeper squad, and everybody seems to be healthy for the most part besides a few players here and there. So I'm super excited, and I'm ready to get football kicked off because it's been a long drought.
Now, let me tell you, I am a 10 out of 10 to watch TCU play. I am a 2 out of 10 about this game time, because if this game goes poorly, by the time the game ends, I won't be able to go to the store and buy a 12-pack of beer to drown my sorrows in. So that's what I'm not excited about. But I am excited to watch TCU go out there and play and hopefully not have a repeat of last season, because God knows I can't handle that mentally this season. But I'm excited. Nolan, what are you, 1 through 10?
No, I'm excited. Well, I'm excited for a different reason, because I'll be at a high school football game that night. So actually, by the time that game ends, I will be out to watch the TCU game. I'm kind of with you on the 12-pack of beer thing, but I was going to respond with, there's an easy fix to that. Just get a 24-pack before the game.
Yeah, but if the game goes poorly, that thing's gone by halftime. And then I'm like, well,
Two.
That's fair.
Just buy more beer.
Yeah.
Oh, exclusively on killerfrogs.com. You hear that on our show. No, I'm excited for Friday night. I'm ready for college football. I was excited for Florida State, Georgia Tech. I mean, I went up to, I won't say the name of the establishment, but I went up to a particular restaurant to watch that game. And I sat there from the kickoff to the final field goal being hit. So I'm excited. I love college football this time of year. I'm going to be jumping back and forth from the high school game I'll be covering to my OU Sooners playing the Temple Owls to TCU playing Stanford. So I've got a lot on my plate Friday night. I'm excited. I'm not really excited about how tired I'm going to be on Saturday morning after all of that happens, where I have to drive down to College Station for another high school game. That kicks off at 11 a.m., by the way. So I'm going to be tired on Sunday. I'll just leave it at that, but I'm excited. Before we get underway, we need to make an announcement. We have been hearing rumblings of the departure of cornerbacks coach Carlton Buckles. We have confirmed that it has happened. We have not confirmed the circumstances around it. What we've been told is personal reasons is why he has left the program. As that develops on, JD and I will be on coverage, and Nate might as well join us as well if he would like to break that down as new information comes out. But all we know is that Carlton Buckles is not with the TCU football program right now for what we are told is personal reasons. Stay by the channel. As more comes out, we will be covering that deeper. Now that that's out of the way, let's go ahead and talk about JD's least favorite game from this past weekend, which he said in episode 7, which we did just minutes ago. What did you say? Did you say the ugliest or the worst game you've ever seen?
It was the worst game I've ever seen, because it was like the anti 2022 national championship of just having your hopes crushed right from the beginning. It was like everything I ever wanted. SMU was crumbling. They were getting personal fouls. They were making mistakes. Brett Lashley calls a timeout. You know, SMU gets stopped at a five for the punt, and then they chose to repunt and accept the penalty. Brett Lashley burns a timeout. Then they punt. Then Nevada punts again, pins them at the one, and then SMU drives the field, takes the lead, and I'm sitting here like, wow, there goes all of my hopes and dreams of being able to make fun of SMU on X. I still did it anyways multiple times throughout the week. So I really, really need TCU to win this week. But regardless, I it was one of the worst games I've ever seen. Brett Lashley coached terribly. SMU looked awful. Preston Stone, I mean, if minus the fourth quarter, he probably looked like he could have played quarterback on the Saturday Pee Wee League and probably still not had a good day. The only bright spot of that entire team is RJ Maryland's a dog. That dude's great. Other than that, Nevada, hey, hello, how you doing? You're a lot better team than you were any of the last 3 years combined. And welcome to FBS, finally.
Ouch, those are some fighting words there. Nate, I want to ask JD one question before I get to you and your thoughts on that game. JD, how embarrassed are you for the ACC right now that that was the showing of the latest team to join? Like, they took a gamble and adding SMU after the Big 12 had been rumored to move on it forever. It seemed like every other power conference was talking about SMU at some point in the last 3 to 4 years. ACC jumps on them, and this is the result week one.
I want to reserve all making fun of the ACC until the TCU game this weekend, because that is an ACC team. But what I will say is SMU almost paid more money to Nevada to play them than SMU is going to get from the ACC this season for being in the league. So, you know, that says a lot about where your program's at financially, by the way.
Well, you're talking a big game, and I know you're known as the pessimist around here. With those words, you just got me fired up for the Iron Skillet game already. Nate, what did you think? Did you watch that game very closely?
Yeah, I watched the game entirely, and I mean, from the start, it looked like SMU belonged on a high school TAPS football game. And I mean, take Preston Stone right back to where he belonged, but he turned it around in the second half. And I mean, he looked like the Preston Stone that we saw last season. And I think it was all coaching, to be honest. I don't think he got him up ready. I think it was a flashback from what TCU saw in their season opener, except they got the win. But I think SMU's in for a rude awakening coming up, because they're going to be playing a lot of tougher opponents. And I mean, it's just not a good look for their conference after what happened to Florida State. And so, I mean, SMU can cheer all they want. They got the win, but they're playing against a Nevada program who hasn't been too good in the past few years. And so there's not much to hang your hat on there.
Is SMU going to be playing tougher competition? I mean,
I was going to bring that up, JD. They follow up this this Saturday with Houston Christian University, formerly Houston Baptist. Then they play BYU the week after before having a week off and playing TCU for the Iron Skillet on September 21st. Then they open ACC play with Florida State. So this is, I mean, I question the scheduling, and I know scheduling goes back years and years, and you know, there was no way 3 or 4 years ago when some of these games were scheduled that you could have, that SMU could have predicted they'd be in the ACC. But I mean, does this really just make you think about how games are scheduled in college football?
There are games scheduled for TCU, I believe, all the way out to 2031 is their net. They have games scheduled out to, which is absurd to me. I get that you kind of want to schedule these teams so far in advance so you have a set in stone, especially because kind of everyone, I assume, saw conference, some form of conference realignment happening. But I mean, you know, let's say like your TCU, you scheduled the SMU to be played this year in 2019 when SMU was really good. Like, they're pretty good. And now you're playing them in 2024, and that game could end up hurting your strength of schedule just because SMU is not good. SMU is decent. Let me change that. They're decent, but you know, they're not as good as you thought they were going to be when you scheduled them in 2019.
You're kind of changing your narrative there. You just ripped on them for this past Saturday, but now you're saying decent.
You know, I haven't decided how I think this game's going to go yet, and I really need to because we're recording the episode right now. If you ask me tomorrow how I feel about the TCU Stanford game, I'll tell you a different story than what I'm probably going to say tonight.
All right, we'll hold that for a second. Nate, what do you got to add? I mean, just the way SMU has this schedule, I mean, you yourself said it, tougher competition. For the next 5 weeks, I don't see any tougher competition aside from maybe TCU when you compare them to Nevada. I mean, does this raise any red flags for how scheduling in college football works?
I mean, it just raises questions. I mean, conference realignment is going to continue to happen, so we don't know – like what the future holds for SMU. But for now, I mean, their first five games are just warm up and getting them into the, like, to their new, like, new competition. But, like, I think their first real challenge will be TCU, I hope at least. And I mean, if they can't change it around, TCU is going to put a slaughter fest on them and they're going to drop 70 points on them. I'll say it right now. And, but Preston Stone's got to get it together, and their coach definitely has to get it together if he wants to make this a decent season.
Do either one of you think that this Houston Christian game for the Mustangs can really help them kind of hone, you know, what they need to do? Do you think this is the tune-up game they're expecting, or do you think that they're just going to take that field in Dallas for the first time this year and kind of put up another lackluster performance like they did on Saturday?
It's the day-old question of when you underperform as a team to open the season, how much does it fire you up to play your next opponent? The question is being asked about Florida State right now. Same question is going to be asked about New Mexico after blowing their loss. It happens every now and then. I mean, you saw it with TCU last season. There were times when they lost to Colorado, and you're like, oh, God, is this going to fire them up the rest of the season? And it didn't. Every team is different. And if the coaching is anything like it looked like during week one, then they might not come out fired up. And, you know, they might only win by two touchdowns when they should be winning by five.
I mean, yeah, I mean, to add on to that, I mean, I'm just going to say it right now. I think they'll only win one of their next five games, to be honest with you. And I think it will be this next game. I think they're going to be in for a rude awakening. And this season, I could see them only winning four games. And I'll say that right now. SMU's in some deep trouble.
So, Nate, you have BYU coming into Dallas and beating SMU.
I do. I do. I have BYU being a sneaky good team. Yeah, they have a lot of roster turnover. But they always have a solid program that's going to be always – they're not going to be a top dog, but they're going to be up there and always competing. And SMU's, if they look anything like they did the other night, they're going to be in trouble.
JD, I noticed you twitched whenever I asked him about BYU coming into Dallas and beating SMU. You got a thought about that?
I am the pessimist, and there are so many times someone comes in here and is way more pessimistic than I am. SMU will be undefeated until they play TCU. And then we'll stay undefeated after they play TCU. But that's a story for a different episode.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to play in a stadium where it's flooding and they're out of water, so it's a lot harder to compete than there, but, you know, we'll save that for Iron Skillet when we talk with Mr. Micah Butel from Just Means Less ACC. He'll be on for that episode.
Well, thanks for spoiling that. There you go, JD with the
He's going to be listening tonight. Don't you worry.
I'm sure he will be. I'm sure he will be. But thanks for spoiling that for our listeners. Yes, we've secured a guest for the Iron Skillet game. And I think, you know, at JD, after you told me who it was, I looked into him a little bit because, you know, he's going to watch this and probably be mad at me. I had no idea who he was when you told me who he was. Looked into him. No, I think this is going to be that's going to be a good show. All right, enough talk about SMU. This is a TCU podcast, so we don't like Dallas. Let's bring it back to Fort Worth and the TCU Horned Frogs, because Dallas is ACC, TCU is Big 12. Let's talk some Big 12 games this week before we really dive into TCU Stanford. JD, you have some that are the opposite of the games of the week. You got your Sickos game games of the week this, and you got two this week.
Yeah, you got two fun ones. You got Wyoming at Arizona State. Wyoming is pretty good against Big 12 schools. Look at Texas Tech from last season. Arizona State is clearly rebuilding. Both of these teams are going to be struggling to move the ball a lot. You're going to expect a lot of punts. So if you, you know, it's a 9:30 game. So if you're still starving for college football, like I will be, you'll be watching that game at 9:30 at night, on Saturday. And then the other game is UNLV versus Houston. This might be one of the lowest rated watchability games all season long. And you can bet I will be watching every second of this.
And it's on Fox Sports 1 in a
yes,
prime time
is.
Slot.
It is. It will be competing against the likes of A&M and Notre Dame. I'm sure more people will be tuning into UNLV Houston if you had to ask me. But yeah, both of those games are sicko games. So if you want to watch some very, very poorly played football, tune in.
By the way,
both games are on FS1, by the way.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, but then you add that one. The first one, the 2:30 kickoff on FS1 is Iowa State and North Dakota.
Yes, it
is.
So
I think Fox Sports 1 is really kind of hurting for the good games to have on there.
What do you mean? That's a network of the people, sickos only.
So there's not going to be a whole lot of big games for us to break down in the Big 12, as a lot of these are most likely going to be blowouts. I don't think the first one is. The first game of the week in the Big 12 is UCF against New Hampshire. JD is really high on UCF, and I think he thinks that's going to be a blowout. Kansas hosts Lindenwood. And here's one that we will pick. The first one we'll all pick. Colorado on Thursday night plays host to North Dakota State. And everybody knows North Dakota State as the FCS power. For once, they're not the defending champions. Colorado is that going for them. But I mean, this is a really, really good program that has proven time and time again that it can go into Power 5, or I guess now Power 4 stadiums, and pull off an upset. It's happened in the Big 12. I know they've done it against Iowa State and Kansas State, and now I feel Colorado might be next on the chopping block. What are y'all feeling about this?
Yeah, Nate, go ahead.
I think this Colorado team's going to be shocked a lot of people this year. They're very athletic, and they've got more years under their belt in a Power 5 conference. And so I expect Deion to have this team turned around, and I expect this to be a runaway game.
Colorado does miss the FCS National Championship. The FCS National Championship or National Champion is playing a fellow Big 12 team, though. But I do think that this game will be a lot closer than people think. North Dakota State is known for having a very, very physical offensive line. And you're talking about a Colorado defensive line that was kind of getting bullied by everyone minus TCU last season. So I kind of expect them to kind of still be bullied in the trenches this year. They got a lot of better players, but I think Colorado wins, but I think it's by a field goal and not by much more.
I'm with you, JD. I think that Colorado's got and both of you make good points. I think they're very athletic, and in the trenches is where I have my fears. And as you said, they got bullied last year. As I said off the top, North Dakota State is a program that has proven time and time again it can come in to FBS power programs and pull off the upsets. I'm with you, although I don't see it happening. I'll one-up JD. I don't think it's a field goal. I think it's by 10. I think it's a field goal and a touchdown. Colorado, I think, pulls away in like the last few minutes of this one. Same night, Utah kicks off against Southern Utah. We won't touch that one. And then the lone Big 12 game on Friday is the one we will be talking about at the end of the show and the one that you are listening for. And then Saturday, Penn State against West Virginia. Now, JD and I were both – higher on West Virginia when we did our rankings than a lot of people are, except for Pat McAfee, who made it very known that he thinks West Virginia is going to be good this season. But this is a big, big test. It's the 11 o'clock kickoff on Saturday on Fox. Mountaineers, Penn State. You guys take this away, and like I did with the last game, I'll wrap it up before moving on.
Yeah, I'll go first. Look, man. Penn State's legit. They're always good when they play teams worse than them. So I kind of expect them to still be good and still do the same thing of taking care of business. But I do think this West Virginia team is not a pushover. Garrett Green's a fantastic quarterback. So I think they'll make it a lot closer than what people anticipated to be. But I still think Penn State comes in and takes care of business.
Yeah, I'm like JD. I think Penn State will take care of business. But Garrett Green's a stud for a quarterback, and he's going to turn some heads this season. But I think Penn State will outlast him at the end. I think West Virginia will need some refinement after this game, but expect it to be close. I'm going to put it within 10 points.
Another sweep of the board. I'm also going to take Penn State. This is a program that's bringing back a lot from last year. And if y'all watched College Game Day Saturday leading up to Florida State and Georgia Tech, they talked about it. This is a program that has always been right on the brink. And if the college football playoff had been 12 teams this whole time, they would have been in it almost every single year. This is one of the top programs in the country that I think gets slept on a lot just because they get tripped up once or twice a season. I don't think that happens in this game. I think West Virginia has a lot to prove. Again, I'll be the third and last one to say it. Garrett Green's a great quarterback, and I look forward to watching him this season. I have a tough time seeing it all come together for West Virginia to get that win. Next game we're going to talk about is the reigning FCS champions, because I am putting this game on upset alert. The South Dakota State Jackrabbits are going to Stillwater, Oklahoma to take on the Cowboys. And you might be shocked that I'm putting on an upset alert because I put Oklahoma State as my number two team in the Big 12 in my preseason rankings. Y'all go ahead and take the reins on this, and I'll save my fun response for the end.
Yeah, go ahead, Nate.
I mean, I would agree with you. I think this is the closest to being an upset alert game. But I still think Oklahoma State will pull away with it. Still not sold on the Oklahoma State offense. Even though Ollie Gordon is a stud, he can't carry the full team. So I'm going to have to say this is going to be win by a field goal.
I want you to look at me. Look me in the camera. Tell me a year Oklahoma State has started off and they've started off hot, or they've started off with the first game being played well. Nope, never, because it's never happened. They got a quarterback who's old enough for Social Security right now. He's going to wake up with back problems in the morning. And South Dakota State is a very well-coached and disciplined team. I put in my what games you should watch this week, I put this as an upset. I claimed it. Like you, Nate, I'm not very too much sold on the Oklahoma State hype. I think if you ask me after week four, they're going to be the best team in the nation. Up until week four, like you saw last season against South Alabama, anything can happen.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like when we go back and talk about JD, when we talked about Mike Gundy, and just it depends on how Mike Gundy is. And if there's one thing I've learned, much to your point about starting off the season hot, I learned that Mike Gundy probably is not a morning person, because he always never seems to start off very well. So I think that this is going to be one of the ones where Oklahoma State is going to be a little frustrated, be playing on their heels, playing a defending national champion, still a D1 national champion, whether it's FBS or FCS, whatever you want to call it, that they could, it's very easy to see the Cowboys losing this game. And y'all brought up Alan Bowman. I mean, you talk about his age and everything. Let's not forget the fact that he had twice his lung collapse when he was at Texas Tech. One of them just before he played in the game against Oklahoma. He was literally warming up and his lung collapsed again. Again, my hype on the Cowboys is not going away for the season. But for this game, yeah, I think that this game is a big one to keep on upset alert. I'm not just putting on upset alert. I'm taking the Jackrabbits by a field goal to end the game.
Interesting.
So
the bold pick.
Let's see here. Let's talk about this one. This could be fun. Tarleton State made their national television debut this past week down in Stephenville and almost blew it against McNeese. Now they go just down the road to McLean Stadium to take on the Baylor Bears, who opened the season last year with a loss to Texas State. What are the chances the Texans going to Waco and come out with a win?
Go ahead, Nate.
Okay, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I think Tarleton State pulls out this win.
Wow.
They were moving the ball really well for the circumstances that they had. They had a few injuries in that game actually that I saw, and so that'll be some notable stuff to like look on. But Baylor's terrible. I'll say it and say it again. They're never going to be good until they figure out a new coach. But yeah, I think the Baylor Bears are going to be in some trouble. I don't think I'm sold on their quarterback, and I'm not sold on the rest of their team. Their defense is hot garbage. So I think Tarleton State, if they just establish the run game and just throw it when they need to, I think they could get this win.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with Tarleton State winning. No, I'm just kidding. Baylor's going to win this, and it's not even going to be close. I would love the story of Tarleton State being able to pull it off, but new offense, Dave Aranda is going to have these boys fired up for week one and week two, and then they're going to all come crashing down and back to earth. But for those first 2 weeks, everything will be bliss in Waco. So, but yeah, I think Baylor takes care of business pretty easily.
I'm with you, JD. And Nate, I got to give a counter argument because, you know, you were talking about Baylor's defense. I actually think Baylor's defense is their biggest weapon. Matter of fact, the last thing I ever wrote for Rivals on that Baylor page was that the defense was going to be their biggest weapon. They didn't lose a lot from defense in the portal. They brought a lot back. The defense was pretty young, and the defense played fairly well, especially early in the season, especially when you look at the Utah game from a year ago. And they all come back. They're all experienced players. I think the defense is going to be even better for Baylor this year. However, I'm with you. I'm not sold on Daquan Finn quite yet. Let's be honest. Yes, he won his conference player of the year, but it was in the MAC. Let's be honest. So, I'm not sold on Daquan Finn. I'm definitely not sold on Dave Aranda either. I would, as both of y'all, I would love the story of Tarleton going into Waco and beating the Bears, but no, I've got to give Baylor the edge on this one. I will say, though, I think it's going to be closer than a lot of people are thinking. I give Baylor the edge by no more than 14.
Baylor wins by 3 touchdowns. Book it.
All right.
I'll put 50 on that.
Okay. Moving on. We already talked about UNLV Houston, as JD said. Texas Tech, Abilene Christian. We don't have to waste time on that one. The Red Raiders should win that handily. BYU plays South Illinois. Arizona.
BYU is only projected to win by 2 points, by the way. So that's a lot closer game than most people think.
And I didn't want to put it as my sicko game of the week just because that is a true sicko game of the week. BYU has no quarterback. I'm not joking. They have no good quarterback. So that will be an awful watch. And I don't even want people to watch that for the memes. Like, just don't watch it.
That's a hot take. Hot sports opinions here on the Gridiron Frogs podcast. And then the last one, because you already teased Wyoming-Arizona State. After the garbage that happened in Albuquerque, do the Lobos have any chance to go into Arizona and beat the Wildcats?
New coach, new program, anything's possible, but no. No Fafita's too good. I mean, if New Mexico's offense can continue playing like they did last week, I mean, I know it was Montana State, but they looked good. So anything's possible, I guess, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I just don't think it's going to happen. They look solid. Offensively, they look solid, but I don't think they can hold off the Wildcats.
And now for our two non-Big 12 games to keep an eye on. Obviously, the one that everyone's going to be keeping their eyes on is Georgia and Clemson. JD, you've had a lot of hot sports opinions today. Why don't you kick this one off?
There's a lot of talk about that game and how Clemson might make it closer than they think. No, Georgia's a juggernaut. They're going to cover the spread handedly. I think the spread's at minus 13 Georgia. They might cover it by 20. So I don't think this is as close as people think it will be.
Nate?
Well, I get to agree with you for once, JD. Yeah, I think it's going to be a runaway game. I think Georgia, it's not going to do what they quite did to TCU, but I think they'll put up some big numbers, and I think they're just going to show that they're coming back for what's theirs.
Yeah, I agree with y'all. I don't think this is the Clemson program that it was even 6-7 years ago. We can have a whole show on what's happened to Clemson and why they're not the same anymore and why the power
portal.
There's that, and there's probably also the NIL we could talk about as well, because I don't know how much money Clemson is putting into these players and all their boosters and everything, so I have no idea. But obviously the ACC, the power has really shifted over to Florida State, or at least so it seemed until Saturday. Georgia's gonna Georgia. I mean, that they're gonna do what they do, and so I take the dogs. I know a lot of things have changed from the portal and the offseason and everything, but I just want to remind y'all how bad Georgia beat Florida State in the bowl game last year. And coming into this opener with Clemson, even if they get off to a sluggish start, I don't see Georgia winning by less than 3 touchdowns, like JD said about Tarleton or Baylor beating Tarleton. The last non-Big 12 game we'll talk about, just because it is in state and people will be paying attention, the Texas A&M Aggies are playing host to Notre Dame, and there's a lot now. As an Oklahoma Sooner myself, I've heard a lot of smack talk from a bunch of different areas, both for and against the Aggies in this game. What do y'all think?
Go ahead, Nate.
I mean, I have the Aggies losing in this matchup. Notre Dame is going to be good, like they always are. And I think that they're going to have enough juice to just kind of push A&M aside and just remind them of what they always are, just a completely mid team. So I'm just going to put that out there, and Notre Dame's going to run away with this one. Not by a lot, but I'll put 10 on it.
This is going to physically pain me to say, but A&M is going to probably win by 17 points against Notre Dame. They are running an almost all freshman offensive line going into College Station, playing a Texas A&M defensive line that is absurdly good. Riley Leonard is a decent quarterback, but he's going to be running for his life in College Station. The Texas A&M offense just needs to be somewhat competent, and they will take care of business handedly against Notre Dame. And I think Mike Elko is a great coach and will have the boys fired up. But, oh God, that hurt to say. But, yeah, A&M by at least 2 touchdowns.
I'm going to actually go ahead and yield on this one. I've got a lot of Aggie friends, and including one who's getting married, and I'm in the wedding. I don't need to ruffle any feathers right now and make that night all about me when everyone comes up asking why you talk crap about the Aggies, because I'm going to take Notre Dame. And I'm going to take Notre Dame fairly handedly. This feels like one of those Aggie games that they schedule and they hype themselves up and they talk about it. And what's the famous saying? Aggies are going to Aggie. You make a good point in the trenches there with the young offensive line for Notre Dame. But the way Notre Dame recruits offensive line and defensive line, it's almost insane. It's like a next man up mentality. And they're obviously a very attractive program to recruit. So I think that these youngsters for Notre Dame will probably be able to make a bigger impact than JD's giving them credit for, because he's a natural pessimist. But so I'm going to take Notre Dame by I'm going to say 12. I'm going to take Notre Dame by 12. That is it for our Saturday selections. That went a lot longer than I thought, and we still have a lot more to talk about, because the game that everyone's been waiting for and the reason they're listening to the show is going down Friday night at 9 p.m. Central Time here in Fort Worth, Texas. It's actually 9:00 here on a Tuesday. So in exactly 3 days, TCU football kicks off against Stanford out there in California. Nate, I'll start with you. Just your initial thoughts about what we can expect from this game.
Yeah, I mean, TCU will say it themselves. It's just going to be testing against themselves. These first 4 games will be test against that TCU team. They know that they're better than what they were last season. They know they have what they need. They have the depth, and they have to put it together. Defensively, they look more like they're quicker, and they seem like a team, a unit, and they seem to be putting together. And our receiving core is a lot bigger. and they got a lot more weapons on this roster now. And I think Josh Hoover is going to understand that he needs to be the game manager and not the hero. And I think he's going to follow in the footsteps of Max Duggan. And I think this starts with game one. And so I expect this to be a solid win. Like, it's going to be a big win for the Horned Frogs. And they're going to show that they have what it takes to compete with this Big 12 conference and hang up there at the top. And I think you'll be surprised.
JD?
Yeah. I think you're going to see a non-Big 12 defensive style game, if we're being honest. And I think it's more so because Stanford has a very, very struggling offense. They have a decent offensive line, but they kind of have no ground identity. They're not going to be able to rush the ball too much, and they're going to have to air the ball out. And now they have Eric Mayanor, I believe is how you say his last name. He's probably a top five receiver in all of college football. But they kind of have no supporting cast around him, which – you know, leads me to be able to say with confidence that I think TCU secondary is more than capable enough of shutting down Stanford's offense. Stanford has a very, very good defensive core of outside linebackers, and their inside linebackers are half decent. They're going to be physical up front. And we've talked numerous episodes now, Nolan, you and I, of what this offensive line might be struggling with. So I think it'll be a lower scoring game than most fans anticipate. But I think that's a first half decision. I think the second half kind of carries more towards TCU. That first half will kind of come as a wash. That offensive line will gel a little bit better together, and second half they'll come out way better. But I truly think TCU's defense will be too suffocating for a Stanford style of play that they're going to try to want to play. And I'm just excited to be able to get out, or you know, sit on my couch and watch TCU play.
For either one of y'all, is there any way, or what is the possibility, and how would it happen, of this being a loss for the Horned Frogs?
Go ahead, Nick.
I think I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, because it happened last year and we were hyped up. We had Big Noon Kickoff at our home. We were hyped up. We were ready to go. We were just coming off of a loss against Georgia the previous season. So I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but we don't have that like hype right now. We're kind of even kill and we're testing against ourselves. So I think they know that they're not up there at the top right now. They want to get there, but I think they're going to be a little more conservative with it and just play their game and play against themselves. And whatever happens, happens. But I think in the end, that will result in a TCU win. But if they get overhyped and let Stanford just play the game that they want to play, anything could happen.
I think the odds of a TCU loss are at about like 30%, 35%, somewhere around that ballpark. And like I mentioned before, it's Eric Amanor. He is literally their entire offense. Against Colorado, he credited for more than half of Stanford's entire offensive yards. He is otherworldly. And you know, we talked about in the last episode, Nolan, where TCU starting Lamarian James and Jamel Johnson and Travius Broughton in the absence of Avery Hillman and Vernon Glover. These are guys that haven't gotten much game time, and now they're going to be thrown in against one of the best receivers in college football. If this pass rush can't get in or has a few hiccups because it is the first game, where maybe their communication is going in and out trying that new system. You know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong that can allow the Stanford offense to kind of find a groove. But I don't think it will happen. I'm more so worried about if this offense comes out of the gate stagnant and allows too many three and outs too soon with the speed of play they have. We saw that a lot last year where TCU would go three and out and then the defense would face a long drive, force a turnover, force, you know, 0 points, and the offense to get the ball back, defense is gas, and then you go three and out again. You can't let that happen. You kind of got to be able to sustain drives, give your defense some rest, especially that secondary. But I don't have TCU. I don't put TCU's risk of losing too high.
Now, assuming this game is a win, which I believe a few episodes ago, both you and Barry, JD, had this game as a win. And I admittedly don't know a lot about Stanford, at least I didn't going into that episode. I know a little more now. But what what makes this game a win? And I'm going to actually double down on my question here. If you have a player of the game, who's the one player that this game you would say really depends on? If you take him off the field, the chance of loss goes up quite a bit. I'll start with you, Nate.
I'm going to go with Trey Sanders. Every single offensive player is high on him. In the press conference today, each one of them had a question about Trey Sanders, even Coach Dykes. And everybody's high on this Trey Sanders who's healthy for once. He hasn't been healthy since his accident that he had at Alabama. And so, I mean, you're looking at a facilitator, and he's going to be a totally different play style than Cam Cook. He's going to be the dude that's going to be penetrating right down the middle and just shoving it right down just the middle lane into the end zone type of guy. And I think that's suffocating for Stanford in the end. I mean, you've got a guy that can run on you and just wear you down. That's going to be tough. And I think if you establish him at the beginning of the game, I think it's going to be a bad game for Stanford. And I think he's going to be one guy that you don't want to take off the field, even though Cam Cook's that guy.
Yeah, I Trey Sanders will play. I don't think he'll play as big a role this game one, just because they're going to ease him into it because he is somewhat injury prone. I think there's two options on this answer, Nolan, and I can't decide which way to go, so I'm going to go both ways. One, and I'll keep this one short and sweet, is Bud Clark, just because he's going to be that leader of the secondary, and we just talked about the secondary kind of being inexperienced. If you take him away, there goes a lot of direction and a lot of leadership capability on that backside of the field that I think will play. He's going to play a major role tomorrow, and especially because I assume if we're playing a single high safety, Bud Clark might be shadowing Abenor pretty much all game, just to kind of prevent that from happening. But the other answer I have is Savion. Dylan Wright, JP Richardson are talented in their own ways. Cam Cook is really good. Drake Dabney, everyone knows I'm high on. But Stanford has shorter than average cornerbacks, which Savion's a freak. He's a freak athlete. He's 6'5". He's taller than most cornerbacks he's going to play. And he has a major advantage this week going into Palo Alto. And I think that he's kind of going to become the safety net for Josh Hoover this weekend. It's going to be the old, hey, just throw it. Savion's down there somewhere. And I think you take him off that field, there, Josh Hoover kind of loses his safety blanket and kind of has to become the playmaker that the coaches haven't wanted him to be. They want him to be the comfortable game manager sort of quarterback.
JD, I'm going to save this one just specifically for you right here. We talked, obviously, just that we know for a fact that Carlton Buckles is not with the program anymore. And again, we don't know the circumstances. Do you think that affects the secondary at all coming into this game?
It's tough to say. You're playing, I mean, you're in a day and age of coaching this year where there's so many more coaches that have a accessibility to the players that can work one-on-one with them now that, you know, you don't know. Like, I'm sure Abe Kamara in the nickel slot is getting coached differently by, you know, another coach who's more focused on the nickelback position. And the safeties coach, Paul, I don't remember his last name, but Paul is coaching, you know, Bud Clark and Jamel Johnson. Like, you know, I'm sure it does play a role because he's been with the program for 2 years now. He's an excellent cornerbacks coach, but I think it'll be more of how much do the other coaches know the schemes of what the cornerbacks are exactly doing? And I think that'll kind of be a bigger question that we'll know. And that's not because the coaches are unprepared, but as a college football coach, you kind of primarily focus on what your guys' responsibilities are. And so, you know, you kind of have to wonder who's going to be coaching them up a lot harder, especially with the news that Andy Avalos will be in the press box. He will not be on the field for the game.
Interesting take there, JD. I appreciate that because, I mean, obviously this, we found out about this today. So that question kind of came out of nowhere. And I know I sprung that on you, but thanks for the insight on that one. Last couple questions here, gentlemen. Score predictions. And again, as admittedly, as I said a few weeks ago and earlier in this show, I'm not very wise on Stanford, so I'll refrain this week. After
before,
this week, I'll
before
give,
we
go
do
ahead.
Score predictions, I have a question for you two. And it kind of ties into your question a little bit, Nolan. Who needs to have a better game this weekend, the offense or the defense?
Nate, you can go ahead. I need to think about this.
I got to go with the defense. I mean, for Avalo's sake, you want it to be like a – you don't want it just to be a coincidence that, oh, maybe it's just our players. Him coming in here, he should have at least a little more improvement seen. And I think as a defense, you want to have improvement, and I think they need to have a better game because you've seen two bad seasons of this defense with only moments of greatness. You need to have more consistency, and I think they need to come into this game fired up.
I don't disagree, and I think with such a senior-heavy defense, that that's definitely not a bad answer. However, I am going to answer the opposite. I think the offense needs to have a really big game. JD, you and I talked about the offensive line in the previous episode, and I think that we really need – I mean, for the sake of the season, I think the offense really needs to have a strong showing going into Stanford this week, especially up front. And then a senior-heavy receiver room that we were talking about. I mean, the experience these guys have, and then you then you just add in Drake Dabney, who transferred in at tight end. There's the receivers and the skill positions are going to have a lot of pressure on them. I don't think there's a lot of pressure on the offensive line. I think expectations are fairly low, but yeah, for the sake of the season, that they need to have a strong showing. So for the win, I agree with Nate. I think the defense needs to have a better game for the win. For the sake of the season, I would rather see a really, really good offensive performance.
Yeah, I think both answers are fair. I think the answer I kind of want to go with is a little slightly different is, yes, the offense does, I believe, have to have a bigger game, but it's not the offense itself. It's the red zone offense. TCU was 116th out of 130 FBS teams last year in red zone percentage. Kendall Briles talked about it himself during his press conference during fall camp that it was, and Sonny Dykes himself said that they had to be better in the red zone. This Stanford team is very, very good in the red zone. They're very stingy in the red zone. They play a physical form of defense that stops teams from being able to convert in the red zone. And I want to see if this team is going to be able to make improvements in that red zone. The amount of times that TCU lost a game last year because they could not convert within the 20s on both sides of the field was absurd. If that team can figure this out, then you take one possession losses from last season, and they could have been 1.5 possession wins for TCU. So I want to see that improvement in the first game because your second game is against Long Island. You're not going to have much that is going to tell us anything from that game before you jump straight into Big 12 play. Like, this is kind of your, hey, we need to get it figured out now.
So talking about that, JD, and I'm glad you went down this. And by the way, very professional way to set that up to answer your own question. That was a very good little segue there for your own to answer your own question. But talking about that, I mean, how often do you think Stanford is offensively will end up in the red zone? And then, do you really think Stanford has the defense to stand up to TCU's offense when the Frogs are in the red zone?
Yeah, Nate, I'll let you take the offensive side of the ball question on this, and I'll handle the defensive side since I just talked about the offense for ad nauseum.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the offense doesn't get enough credit to what it deserves. Yeah, I mean, it has its issues, but, like, I'm not really worried about it, and I think it's just going to be, like, kind of like a – I just don't know how to explain it. I just see a lot of improvement. Kind of what I see in, like, Stanford as well. I think Stanford's going to be a sneaky good offensive team, but it's just going to be sneaky. It's going to be sneaky instead of, like, consistent.
I think what you're trying to say is TCU, you're not worried about the personnel. And neither am I. I'm not worried about the personnel. TCU has the ability and the playmakers to be good.
Yeah.
Between the 20s, Kendall Briles last season was a top 10 offense. And the red zone is when they struggled. I just need to see that change. As for the defense, without having too much of a run game on Stanford's side of the ball, it kind of does worry me because – The run game plays a key major component within the red zone, which is why it was even more shocking that TCU struggled in it last year, because the run game was so good. Monty Bailey was averaging nearly 6 yards a carry almost every game. What I am worried about is Eric Amanor going against, you know, the likes of Lamarion James a little bit. I think Lamarion's fantastic one-on-one, but Eric Amanor embarrassed Travis Hunter on two goal line fades last season. And that's Travis Hunter. Like, if he could do that to him, then who knows what else he could do. As long as this defensive line and this 4-3 model and being able to disguise the defenses works like it should be, and the defensive line can get home, then I think they'll be pretty good within the red zone.
All right, well, now it's time for the score projections, because JD, I know Nate hasn't been with us the whole time, but you and I have been doing this for almost 2 hours straight now, and I'm getting pretty tired. let's talk score predictions, gentlemen, and like I was about to say earlier, I'm going to go ahead and refrain this week. I'll take over every week from now on, because I know more about every other team we're going to play, but not the best educated on Stanford, as I admit. So I'll let you guys take this, and Nate, you can go ahead and start. What is your score prediction for this one?
I have the Horned Frogs winning 56-21. Like JD said, I think the first half will be close. I think we'll end up seeing it. I think Stanford will score 14 and TCU will score 21. And then TCU will run away with it in the second half.
Yeah. I have the final score is 34-28 TCU. And primarily because TCU has, under Sonny Dykes at least, and even going back to 2020, has not played the first game of the season too well. But going against Colorado in 2022, going to the national championship, they extremely struggled in that game early on until about halfway through the third quarter when they turned it on. And I don't expect that to change too much. It's always tough playing your first game against a tough opponent, because they've had 6 months to scheme for you and what's going to happen. So there's a lot of different possibilities that can happen. So I think this is a lot closer game than what most people are going to think. But yeah, 34-28, TCU wins. But I don't think it's as close as it seems. I think it's like TCU's up 34-20, and then Stanford comes and scores late to make it closer than what it seems.
Final question, which is the better mascot, Super Frog or that darn tree?
Burn the tree. Burn the tree at all stakes. That is not even a question. Super Frog is the real deal, and theirs is a oxygen maker. I guess good for them.
This is for Just Means Less ACC and for all the different Stanford burner accounts that have been in my mentions for the last 2 days. Your tree mascot is a bottom 10 mascot in all of college football. Super Frog would take him one-on-one in a fight any day of the week. And I truly, truly think that with how smart your school is, you could have came up with something better than just a little Christmas tree. I mean, what are we doing here, guys?
Literally has no arms.
Yeah.
Literally has no arms.
I mean, you can't even be like, you can't do push-ups after they score touchdowns, because Stanford doesn't score that much anyways.
Oh,
119th
man.
Last season in points per game at 20. It was awful. That's
something I wish the college football video game would have brought back, the mascot mashup. That'd be a fun thing. That'd be something we could do. We could just do a sim of the mascot game and commentate over it. But unfortunately, they did not do that. Nate, JD, thanks so much for this one. You guys have any final thoughts?
No, just thanks. Thank y'all for having me on. It was a great episode, y'all.
Yeah. Nate, do you want to shout out your socials for everyone listening?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram at cross4352. And then I am on X. It's a quite a long one.
You'll see it in the tweet if you don't want to say it all out.
It's Nate Cross 474783. You can follow me there. I'll be going to the weekly pressers for TCU, so I'll be posting stuff on X, so just
what weekly there. Article do you have coming out this week, and what day will it be out?
I'm starting a new article, player profile, so every week they bring players into the presser and I will be doing a little player profile about them, because they are an important piece to the TCU Horned Frog team. There's a reason why they're being pressed. And so I'm going to be doing that, and then I'll have Know Your Fro coming out on Fridays, and I'll be basically just highlighting some key players to watch for, on each team. So I'll be highlighting who to watch for on Stanford.
Yeah. Nate, thanks for joining us. And all I want to say to close this one out is, by the time you're listening to this, by the time I get this published, it'll be TCU game day. So relax, go have a beer or the new TCU tequila. And let's start the week off right with a win against a terrible conference opponent.
There we go. There we go. All right. Thanks, JD. Thanks, Nate, for joining us again. Go follow him and be ready for his articles. JD and I also have weekly stuff will be coming out that we'll be talking more about, because I won't have mine this week. I'll have mine next week. And we'll talk more about that on next week's show. But Frog fans, that does it for the second episode in about 2 hours of us recording. This was the eighth episode of Gridiron Frogs podcast, part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, or however you find your podcasts. We'll see you next week with another great show. And until then, for my partner, JD Andrus, and our special guest, Nate Cross, and everybody at killerfrogs.com, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Go Frogs.